Friday then. Nick DiGilio here. Morning, everybody. Yeah, that familiar theme that you hear means that it is Monday morning, and it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Every Monday morning, Colin Suter and Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me to talk about all the new movies, review them, and check out the box office for the weekend. So let's get to that here on 720 WGN. Here's Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Hello, and here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello. Good.
Good, good, good. All right, let's talk about the box office, and then we'll get to the new movies. And, of course, we'll talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is coming up just at May 1st.
Under 2 weeks.
Under 2 weeks. Big, and it's May 1st through...
The 7th.
The 7th, May 1st through the 7th. So it's like it's a full week, and it's at the Music Box Theater. Very cool. So we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. All right, well, let's talk about the box office. Obviously, the big story continues to be Furious 7.
Yeah.
Which has worldwide made $1 billion.
Yep. $1.15 billion, to be precise.
Now, is America the biggest money-making country for the film, or does it make – is there another a part of the world that it does really well in?
It is – yeah, currently U.S. Has the largest amount of any country currently. But China has actually grossed over $250 million itself.
Wow.
So China loves the Fast and Furious movies.
Wow. Wow, man. Well, you would think actually Japan would be the more
right.
would be the place that would like it more than China. All right, so it made $29 million over the weekend, bringing its total in America up to $294.4 million. So for April, is this like the biggest money-making movie ever in the history of April releases? Do we know?
I believe so. I don't think there's ever been a film that has grossed $300 million that has opened in April before.
Wow.
Captain America, the last Captain America movie did like $250 some million. So I think that was the tops for April.
Really is incredible.
Yep.
It just is. All right, so number two on the list is Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, which made $24 million. Oddly, none of us saw it this weekend.
No.
No, Colin, you didn't see it either.
No. I managed to avoid it.
Okay, so what we're going to do, since none of us saw the new Paul Blart Mall Cop movie, is repeat Andy Herman's review of the first one from years ago. So that's what we're going to do, where I believe he counts the fat guy falls down jokes, if I remember correctly. Yeah, and he's got like a list. He has like a laundry list of things to talk about. So none of us saw Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, but it did make it pretty impressive. I mean, $24 million, that's pretty good.
It's not as much as the first one did. The more fascinating number is not the box office number, but what it currently is at Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Which is?
0%.
It's at 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes. Not screened for critics, so not everyone went to see it. But this includes some overseas reviews, people who saw it over there after it opened last week at the box office, and then the critics this week, and it's yet to find a single positive review from any critic that has reviewed it.
Wow. Okay.
That's very rare.
Seriously, it's rare to have like a 0%.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but this movie opened bigger than like some of his other ones, like that Talking Ape movie.
The Zookeeper.
Zookeeper, yeah.
That was the talking ape Nick Nolte, by the way.
Oh, that's right. It was Nick Nolte, wasn't it? Oh,
yes.
God forbid he needed a paycheck. Mm-hmm. So there's that, and then what was the one with the
wrestling movie?
With Salma Hayek?
Yeah, Here Comes the Boom.
Here Comes the Boom.
Yeah.
But this did better than
the other Sandler movies have opened higher.
Yeah. Well, that's mm-hmm. it's not. But those aren't really like Kevin James movies,
right?
I mean, those are like an ensemble movies with all the with all the Sandler idiots,
right?
So, all right. So 0%. What were some of the lowest ones? I was looking at this on your box office report. What were some of the lowest ones so far in 2014 that were scored on Rotten Tomatoes? Hot Tub Time Machine 2 got 14%.
Yeah, Taken 3 was at 9%.
Oh, my God, really?
Yeah, that was actually the lowest scored wide release of the year, 9%. The Boy Next Door, your Rob Cohen, your boy.
That's my boy.
11%. Seven Son was at 13%. The Gunman was at, and The Unfinished Business was at 12%.
Wow. All right. Well, so not good.
No.
People aren't enjoying it. All right. Number three. Boy, this is a big success. Unfriended coming in at number three with $16 million. So did that like triple the budget?
I think it does times 16 from what I'm hearing.
So that's a big opening for that movie.
It's a huge opening. I mean, this is Blumhouse Productions, and you know their thing is, you know, they do budgets for like $7 million and less, and they turn big profits. So this is about pretty average for horror movies over the last couple of years. So that's a solid opening.
Yeah. Really big opening, and let's see. It's the Unfriended was into that getting it. They got a C from the audience during the week, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Critics actually responded much better to it, giving a 66% rating at Rotten Tomatoes, higher than the list's previous champion, which was Evil Dead at 62%, which was the only film to be certified fresh from critics. Some of the other so you got some of the other horror films here.
Mm-hmm.
For their openings, Dark Skies at $8.1 million, Evil Dead 25.7, Texas Chainsaw 3D 21.7, Ouija, God, 19.8, Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones. Which one was that? Was that the last one?
That was the last one, yeah.
Okay, because I can't tell them apart.
No.
You got Unfriended, and then Woman in Black 2. Woman in Black 2 actually made $15 million on its opening weekend.
Yeah, I don't think it even doubled that then the rest of its run.
Oculus with 12.
Ugh.
Yeah. The Lazarus Effect. Devil's Due. Silent Hill Revelation. Chernobyl Diaries. The Last Exorcism Part 2. Dumbest title ever. Silent House with 6.6 and The Quiet Ones with 3.8.
Yeah, that's just over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Unfriended, we'll get to the review in a little bit, but I actually liked it. I thought it was good. Not Eric, you saw that? Did you see that at a film festival?
Yeah, it was at South by Southwest.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
so, could you tell me about that one? And then what's the other one that takes place on the computer screens and the
Open Windows?
Open Windows, right? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So The Longest Ride, what happened to The Longest Ride?
Well, I don't think people really cared to see it after that. I mean, Unfriended, you had more than a few openings this week, and it wasn't enough to sustain much of an audience. 47% drop this week. So.
47% drop. What did it open, like 20 million last year?
No, not even, like 13. So 13, 14, 14 million maybe
right.
Last week?
Yeah. It made $6.8 million this week.
Yeah.
Which put it in fifth place. So, all right, Fury 7 continues to dominate. Will Fury 7 be unseated Friday? Is anything coming out Friday that's going to do it, or is it going to be until Avengers comes out?
It's going to be until Avengers comes out.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, this upcoming week, you have... the Russell Crowe directorial effort, The Water Diviner. I don't see that unseating it.
Yeah,
or,
no,
I,
no.
Or Age of Ant, or Blake Lively Doesn't Get Old.
Oh!
Movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Serena doesn't age.
Right.
All right. All right. Well, listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll finish talking about the box office, and then we'll jump into the movie reviews. It is Monday morning. Colin, hang on. Eric, hang on. And when we come back, we got more Monday morning reviews and box office figures to talk about right here on 720 WGN. Nick. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Colin and Eric join me every Monday morning to talk about the movie reviews and the box office. And we are analyzing the three-day box office returns from this weekend. Furious 7 busted in at $29 million, bringing its total here stateside to $294.4 million total. And we got more to talk about. And we welcome Colin. Colin.
Hello there.
All right. And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Okay. So Furious 7, number one, Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2. Comes in second. Unfriended comes in third. Home comes in fourth with $10 million and $142 million. Now, in terms of that kind of comparison, is this movie considered a success?
Yeah, I mean, worldwide, it's not really a huge success for DreamWorks. It's going to be a kind of a slight success. It's going to kind of struggle to beat SpongeBob this year. I think it's probably going to just kind of nudge it out, and it'll be the number one animated film of the year probably until the next Pixar film comes out, and then Minions on top of that.
Right. Okay. And then number five, Longest Ride, as we mentioned, $6.8 million. Number six, Get Hard, $4.8 million. Number seven, Monkey Kingdom, with a very disappointing opening, $4.7 million. Didn't people expect that to do a little bit better?
Yeah, I mean, the Disney Nature series have never been huge box office numbers. I think the highest number it's ever done was like just a little over $10 million on opening weekend. But this is the slightest that any of them have ever made. So not huge, but it's really hard to call it much of a disappointment because they've had like five or six of these now, and none of them have been really huge. You know, they've just been sort of slight, you know, slight profits.
Well, you know, they don't cost a lot of money, right? I mean,
no.
It's just you take some cameras out into the nature,
mm-hmm.
shoot it, and then get somebody to narrate it.
Yeah, and I've kind of lost track of like which, because when they started doing these a few years ago, they were basically sort of culled from those from like the nature series. That had already been, you know, broadcast on television and BBC and stuff. So a lot of the footage was actually taken from those series. I think that now they branched out and they started to do some fresh ones now, like with Monkey Kingdom. But like Earth and Oceans, those were originally taken from miniseries, nature miniseries.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. But now do these movies, I mean, they'll get a... These movies will get like a second life on video, correct?
Oh, sure.
Okay. So number eight is Woman in Gold, $4.5 million. And then, of course, the full title, number nine, the Divergent series Insurgent, $4.1 million, bringing its total up to $120 million. Now, that's not doing as well as the first one did, right?
No, it's about worldwide, it's about a little over $50 million off from what the first film did. It's about right now. It's about just about $30 million behind what it did in the U.S. So you know, about 125 to 130 is where this one's going to finish up, and it's struggling to be a hit at this point.
And then Cinderella comes in at number 10 with $3.8 million, bringing its total up to $186.3 million total. So
yeah, and that's one of the most profitable films of the year so far.
Wow,
But Furious 7, seventh highest grossing film of all time. All time.
Now, I've been a fan of these movies for a long
time,
since the beginning, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have never never seen this coming. Would anybody have predicted this? These kind of numbers, this kind of record for the seventh movie in the Fast and Furious series?
Certainly not in 2001. Yeah. So certainly not after Tokyo Drift. This thing was going to be a monster. I mean, ever since The Rock entered the picture, so to speak, these things have been huge. And this latest one, I don't know if anyone was thinking, this month that was going to be like $1.15 billion and counting. I think that I certainly thought a billion was a possibility, just based on the increased popularity of these things, the Paul Walker situation. So I this thing was going to be huge, and I've been saying for a while now that the list, Avengers, Star Wars, Furious 7. That's your list this year. And that seems to be the case. And I don't even know if Star Wars is going to make this much.
Oh, no. Come on now.
I think it will.
Yeah.
It might. It probably will. But, I mean, this is the fourth week, third week of Furious 7?
Mm.
I mean, this movie made $1 billion faster than the Avengers did. Think about that.
That's insane.
Yes. It beat it by 2 days.
Oh, man. So have you guys seen the latest Star Wars trailer?
Yes.
About 100 times, yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody actually went back and mixed together both the teaser trailer and the new trailer, and it actually looks pretty good.
Oh, they put both of them. They put both of them together?
Yeah, somebody did a very good editing job of making it one big trailer, and I got to tell you, that's the one I'm going to be watching.
It's funny because as you guys know, I couldn't care less about it, and I was with my friend Mike View, who is was a Star Wars fan until the three prequels came out,
mm-hmm.
and then that all changed. But now he's all excited. Because he's like, oh, this is going to be great, He thinks that J.J. Abrams is going to get it right, and it's going to correct all the problems that were done in the prequels.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hanging at the bar with him the other day, and I'm like, have you seen the trailer for the new one? And he's like, no, I haven't. And I was like, well, here's the deal: you just watch it. And prepare to crap yourself for the last shot.
Yeah.
And, as a Star Wars fan, as a big Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm.
So he's watching it. He's sitting there. He's got it on he's got it on his phone. He's watching it at the bar. And he's watching it. And then, boom, that last shot comes up. And he was like, it's going to be the greatest movie ever made.
Now, have you seen the edit where they have Matthew McConaughey watch the Star Wars trailer?
Yes, I have, from Interstellar.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
That is the way to watch the trailer, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic, yeah.
When he's sitting there and he just starts waving at the film, I lost it.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's very, very funny. Very funny. But, people have a lot of time on the Internet.
Yeah.
A lot of time. But no, but that last moment, and I got to say, man, I'm not, like I said, I'm not a Star Wars fan. Now, in 99, when Phantom Menace was going to be released, I have to say the fact that I didn't enjoy Jedi at all. But when I first saw the trailer for Phantom Menace, I was like, oh, okay. Because it had been so long,
mm-hmm.
It had been like 16 years at that point. I'm like, okay, all right. Cool, and I got excited. I do have to say that when I saw Han and Chewie, I was like, okay, this might be cool.
Yeah.
that was the deal. It was like, all right, okay, it's Han and Chewie, the two coolest characters in the series, and they closed the trailer with them,
with the perfect line.
Yeah,
on the deck of the Falcon.
Yeah, I mean, So, no, that was pretty cool. So I got to say, J.J. Abrams is doing it right, I think. What, Eric, now you're a massive Star Wars fan, as are you, Colin. But, Eric, tell me how are you feeling about this one?
As a Star Wars fan, you see the trailer, I have the reaction that everybody does. But then I try to step back just a little bit, and I just remind myself that Well, okay, J.J. Abrams did two Star Trek movies that I didn't like.
Yep.
Okay, and I always go back on that, and, you know, I was like, I think about, you know, what he's done so far, and like, you know, I think the third Mission Impossible film is pretty good. I don't think it's great. I'm a fan of Super 8, but you know, I go back to those two Star Trek movies. I'm just like, yeah, that trailer looked cool too the first time I saw it, and I was incredibly disappointed. So I'm just, all I can say is I hope that when we, you know, we get to see this movie, that, you know, time travel doesn't play an intricate part in it.
Yeah, man. You know, as I've said before, he even did that in Felicity.
Yeah.
He even did time travel in Felicity.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, man, come on.
Yeah.
Colin, where do you stand on it?
I couldn't be more excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, when I see those shots of the X-Wing fighters and the pilots, I mean, I just think, man, this is going to be a ride, you know? I mean, from what it looks like, this is made by a guy who really did grow up with the Star Wars movies and, you know, is relishing the idea of making his own.
Yeah.
You know, that's the general sense that I get. And, you know, as long as there's no, you know, Jar Jar Binks type character in it, I think we're in good hands, you know.
Yeah, I'm with you, Colin. I mean, I don't care, but I think you're right. I think that this is made by a guy who really does love and has grown up with the Star Wars series, and I think he's going to make the fans happy. That's just me.
And he has said that he is more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan. So I think he might just put a little bit more heart into this one than he did the Star Trek movies.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I don't care about any of that because Mad Max comes out May 15th. So.
Well, there's that.
It's like, I don't care. Mad Max comes out May 15th. That's it. I'm just counting the days. All right. All right, guys. Hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We got some movies to review. And we will review the new movies coming up right here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio on a Monday morning. All righty then. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, we are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 2 a.m. I'm sorry, till 5 a.m. We started at 2 a.m. What the hell's going on? It's only Monday, Dan. And Monday morning is when, by the way, my dad calls in and tells a joke. It's a jokey time. That'll be coming up at around the 4:45-ish break. We've got a very... very nice Blackhawks Express to play back. In fact, I think the best game that the Hawks have played in many weeks was yesterday. So we'll play that back. They're up now 2-1 in the series against Nashville. But we're reviewing the new movies, and that's what we do here at this time. And so we got some movies to review. Let's welcome Colin Suter and Eric Childress. And, yeah, you guys, we will also talk about the Chicago Critics Film Festival. You guys can tell us about that as well. But we got a few movies to review right now. Why don't you, Colin, start us off with Clouds of Sils Maria.
All right. Well, this stars Juliet Binoche and Kristen Stewart. And Binoche plays an actress who is asked to return to starring in a play that she made famous 20 years ago when she played the younger character. Now she's asked to return and play the older of the two characters in the play, and this sort of sets off a bit of a midlife crisis of sorts for the actress. And Kristen Stewart plays her assistant, who encourages her to take the role and help her rehearse it and to sort of keep things in perspective for her. Oddly enough, though, the play, which is about a woman and her young assistant, has many parallels to their real lives and who they are and how they interact with each other. So so much so that you often wonder what you're watching, a rehearsal or, you know, the real thing. Chloe Grace Moretz is also in the film as a young actress who will be playing opposite Binoche in the play. She's like the new It girl in Hollywood. She's, you know, plays in superhero movies, and she also gets into trouble, like, you know, Lindsay Lohan. She has that kind of a publicity record when she's not in front of the camera, getting in all kinds of trouble. So naturally, Binoche is pretty skeptical about her acting ability. The film has a bit of a surreal element to it as well. The title refers to the clouds that sort of sweep in and around the mountainsides of Switzerland, which is something that the playwright involved in the movie was a friend of Binoche's character. He sort of had an affinity for this. And that character just died, that too, at the beginning of the film. We're told that he just died. And he's the one who wrote the play that they're doing. So the film is not quite as straightforward as it seems. Like I said, there's a surreal quality to it. There's an ambiguity to it that I found interesting. And there is a sort of meta quality in the casting. That's pretty deliberate. A lot of it feels like you're watching a play, but I think there's enough of a cinematic element to sort of counterbalance that. It's kind of a strange film. I when it was over, I wasn't quite sure how much I liked it, but I know that I had a good positive reaction to the performances in it. I think Binoche is great. She's always great. And Kristen Stewart, I think her performance is, very assured, very confident, very many steps above, the sort of Twilight stuff that we usually associate her with. Chloe Grace Moretz, I think, is good. Moments where I thought maybe she was maybe a little miscast, like almost too good of an actress to play this part. But I think it's kind of a strange film, but I'm mostly positive on it. But at the end, I wasn't sure it was quite how positive I was on it. If it wasn't about Hollywood, would I have found it as interesting? I'm not sure. So I think it's worth watching for the performances, even if it does go on a little bit too long.
Okay. I haven't seen it, but I actually have enjoyed many of this director's movies in the past. Olivier Assayas, particularly Summer Hours, which I think is a tremendous movie.
That is a great movie. Yeah.
And Juliette Binoche is incredible in that film. So I'm interested in seeing this one. Eric, what did you think?
Yeah, I liked it. I think I'm a little more confident in my positivity than Colin was, but I do agree. I do see exactly what he's getting at. It's a film that it wants to play with all these sort of elements of aging and time and like Colin said, the sort of the meta quality over precisely are we watching sort of the version of the play, or is it a version of a play in our head?
Yeah.
Is certain people real, or are they not real, that kind of stuff. But then you sort of come back to just how good the acting is in the film, and the film is never less than interesting, although it does get a little too on the nose in some of the later scenes with Chloe Moretz. I do agree with what Colin was saying about that. But Binoche is very good, and Kristen Stewart is actually really good in this movie.
Wow.
Yeah,
listen to Eric, man.
Yeah. Have I been the harshest Kristen Stewart?
I think you have, man.
Show? Have I? Okay.
Yeah. I think so. I think you have, yeah.
Okay. Well, I think this might be her best work to date. There's never a moment when you sort of see the tics and spasms that we sort of criticized her.
Do you know what movie you were the harshest on with her?
Was
that
one?
That damn Snow White?
Oh, Snow White and the Huntsman.
Oh man!
Yeah.
Did you rip her?
Did I?
Oh man!
I gotta go back and listen to the tape on that one. I do know that she was awful in that movie, and now I'm thinking of just how awful she was. But she's really good in this movie. She's really good. And Binoche and I think the scenes between the two of them, which is mostly sort of the first two-thirds of the movie, I think is sort of what drives this thing. And then, you'll certainly be thinking about the movie when you leave. Out of how long you spend on its mysteries is probably more where where Colin kind of is on the film. But it is interesting and worth checking out.
Okay. All right, cool. That's The Clouds of Sils Maria, which is playing in Chicago at five theaters, and you can check it out there. All right, guys, hang on. We got more movies to review, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
you guys can talk more about the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is very exciting. It starts on May 1st at the Music Box Theater. Okay. Hang on, guys.
Okay.
There you go, Colin and Eric hanging on, and we'll come back and talk more right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. Hi, everybody. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. A little bit later on, my dad tells a joke. It's a jokey time. Monday morning, we always like to kick off your week with a jokey joke. And every Monday morning, my friends Colin Suter and Eric Childress join me to talk about the box office, which we talked about. Furious 7 is making a little money. And Eric Childress joined me. Colin?
Hello.
And Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, tell us about, now, how do we pronounce this? Ex?
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. Okay, tell
yes.
us about that.
Okay. Well, this is a story that's set sometime in an undetermined future. It stars Domhnall Gleeson as a young sort of computer engineer working at the company of a very famous, very reclusive engineer played by Oscar Isaac. And one day he wins the company contest that was being sponsored by its owner to go up to his his home in the mountains and spend a week with him. And so Domhnall Gleeson is flown out to this reclusive ranch, or if you will, and Oscar Isaac is the sort of eccentric billionaire, if you will. And he greets him, and he has it's not just a time to sort of get to know each other and hang out and just, you know, sort of a little prize for Gleason's character. But Isaac has developed a new kind of artificial intelligence, and it's in the form of an AI robot played by Alicia Vikander. And the whole purpose behind Gleason's visit is basically to act as sort of a test subject, to sort of talk to this robot and see if he can actually distinguish her sort of emotional state from that of humans. She is most obviously a robot by her design. She's not completely covered in flesh. She has a face and parts of her body, but it's most definitely a mecha creation. So it becomes almost, you know, speaking of plays, it sort of becomes this sort of this stage play, if you will, with these three characters interacting over the course of this week, with everyone sort of having some possibly ulterior motives involved in exactly what they're trying to get out of one another. That sets the stage for stimulating week, but also possibly a very dangerous one as well. The film was written and directed by Alex Garland. It is his directorial debut. This is a guy that's probably most known for writing a few of Danny Boyle's films and sci-fi films, including 28 Weeks Later, 28 Days Later, and Sunshine. And I think he does a really nice job here with his debut. The characters are all very interesting. He does provokes the kind of questions about AI, artificial intelligence, and being human that so many films over the last couple of years, including stuff like Transcendence, have really failed to engage our minds with. And I think this is just really set a really good, solid science fiction. I don't think it reinvents the wheel at all. I think really the best thing about it certainly is Oscar Isaac, who I think is just having an absolute blast playing this character.
He is really just broken out, man.
Yeah, Yeah,
and become a major player.
Yeah, and you know, I think we went back a few years and we saw him in all movies, Sucker Punch.
Right.
And he was also in Madonna's last directorial effort. You know, you see him in those movies and just kind of like you don't know, who is this guy? Just like, where does this guy come from? But then you got, not just this, but Llewyn Davis and Most Violent Year. And now, both Domhnall Gleeson and Oscar Isaac are going to be in another sci-fi film later this year.
Oh, yeah, a little movie.
Called Star Wars.
A little teeny movie, yeah.
Yeah. So these guys are clearly on the upswing, although you don't see either of them in the trailer, really. So their roles are still kind of shrouded in mystery. But, if you want a good warm-up, Ex Machina is definitely one of the better films in theaters right now, and is one you should absolutely check out.
All right, cool. Interesting. Awesome. All right, Colin, what did you think?
I really liked it, too. It's a very talky sci-fi film. It's not as much of a thriller as maybe the trailer lets on, so people should kind of know that going in. When you look at it, I echo everything Eric said about it, and about the questions that it poses about AI and everything. When you really look at it, a lot of the movie is about sex and the male fantasy and how it kind of corrupts and is often led astray. It's got a very uncompromising vision, it's not going to all end how you think it's going to end. And I love the sterile atmosphere of the setting. And just how sort of unsettlingly clean and devoid of, personality that this house has. It just makes you wonder. It says so much about the character by just not having that much in the background for this sort of eccentric billionaire. So a lot of it, great choices are made in just the art direction and the performances and the way it's shot. It's a very compelling debut, and a good sort of companion piece to Her in a way. Another movie that sort of dealt with AI in terms of the relationships between men and women. I think this movie definitely is in that category. Definitely worth checking out if you're. It continues this, long line string of great sci-fi movies that we've had since Her, I think, late 2013. It's been quite a strong run for great intelligent sci-fi movies. And this definitely, fits in that category.
What was the name of that Al Pacino movie with the
Simone?
Oh, Simone. Yeah, where does mm-hmm. that is? Does that one is it similar to this at all in any regard or no?
I thought that was more like a comedy. There was a lot more broad humor in that. This is a far more intelligent film. Simone was a movie that disappointed me. I remember when I saw it.
Yeah, I haven't gone back to look at Simone. I liked Simone at the time. I think where these two movies, what they have in common, and to sort of spin off what Colin was talking about, is that the movie is actually it's more interesting, not so much in sort of the whole debate over artificial intelligence versus humanity, but really you look at this piece and what it's really about is sort of the oppression of women in society by sort of male men in power figures, as authority figures. And I think that if you look at the movie in that dynamic, just with sort of a sci-fi slant to it, I think you'll come away with it with even more interesting things to talk about rather than just as sort of a mere piece about robots.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. Well, that's out there. You can check that out, too. It's only in three theaters. Let me check what three. Do we know what three theaters it's playing at?
I believe it's River East, Landmark Century, and I saw it at Evanston.
Yeah, so it's in Evanston. Yeah, it's exactly. Those are the three theaters. River East right here downtown, Landmark Century on Clark and Diversey, and the Century 12 in Evanston.
It should be opening wider soon. It opened in New York and L.A. last week, and it made its way to Chicago this week. Still only in 39 theaters across the country, and we got three of them. So,
wow.
Okay. More people are going to get to see this because it's actually doing very well in limited release right now.
All right. Cool. All right. Interesting idea. So there we go. All right. Let's see. Eric, why don't you tell us about, or I'm sorry, Colin, why don't you tell us about Unfriended?
All right. Well, this is a movie that takes place entirely on a computer screen. It's a horror movie. It's about a group of friends chatting online, and they end up being haunted by one of their classmates who killed herself not too long ago, and or at least, yeah, that's the supernatural force that's sort of taken over their chat room, and they're not quite sure what's going on. I think it's part of their, you know, computer being corrupted, or just some hacker hacking in and being, you know, just goofing off with them, and until it starts to turn deadly. And so, yeah, there's a bit of a body count as it goes along. And I'm just going to say, you know, I say this a lot, but it's true. When I go to a movie, I usually go in pretty cold, not reading up too much on it. I never saw a trailer for this movie. I had no idea that the gimmick of the film was going to be the whole thing was going to be on a computer. I've seen short films that attempt this sort of thing and do it quite well. And I think that's where it should stay. About 20 minutes into this film, I realized, this is the whole thing's going to be on the computer, isn't it? The whole film, this is going to be the whole film. And I remember just getting really upset about that whole idea. I hated this stupid film. I really couldn't stand it. I mean, I thought you've got to be kidding me. This is where we're headed now. This is a movie now. This passes. Okay, great. I gotta stare at a Mac screen all day at work, and then you gotta shell out $12 to sit it and watch somebody else see that spinning ball on the big screen pop up. Like, really? This is what I gotta sit through now. And you know, I hated every character. I wanted them all to just be off, and maybe that's the whole point. But I don't think that's just not something I'm down with. You know, it's like pay good money to, you know, and I didn't pay money. I went to a screening, but still, it's the idea of paying good money to watch characters you hate interact with each other online, and never leave the confines of the computer screen. And I understand it's an experiment, and horror movies are known for, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit for experimentation and trying to do things with the form. And I'm a fan of, you know, Blair Witch and a lot of the found footage horror films. And so, okay, fine. Trying something different with the form, I respect that. That's fine. I just hated the experience of watching this movie. I couldn't wait for it to end, and I'm kind of baffled as to how it's getting the good reviews that it has. So, but apparently I'm in the minority on this one, or general minority. So I couldn't recommend this film less.
Okay. All right. Colin, hang on. Eric, hang on. We'll get Eric's review and my review of Unfriended coming up after we take this break. Colin evidently didn't like it. Welcome back, everybody. Movie review time. And we're in the middle of reviewing Unfriended. Eric and Colin are with me. We are also going to tell you about the Chicago Critics Film Festival and give you all the information about that and some of the films that you can see there. It starts at May 1st. Starts on May 1st at the Music Box Theater. Colin just gave us his review of Unfriended, and Colin, you didn't like it very much.
Unfriended. Give me a break. No, I didn't like it. No.
Okay. Eric, what did you think?
Well, Nick, let's try to see if you and I can explain to Colin why this movie is getting some good reviews. this whole idea of the movie taking place on a computer screen, this is, you know, and this is not going to make Colin feel any better, this is sort of becoming the new found footage gimmick, if you will. I think that you're going to see this replace found footage, at least some of the found footage movies, if you will. And I mean, like you said, we mentioned a film called Open Windows that with Elijah Wood and Sasha Grey that utilizes this concept, and I think he utilized it pretty well until it gets completely ridiculous. I mean, even a Modern Family episode utilized this entire thing, doing a Skype session between people at the airport and at home and all kinds of stuff. So it was even mined for comedy. But I liked this movie, and one of the reasons that I actually liked it, you know, I don't know if it's exactly saying anything interesting, if you will, about cyberbullying or anything, but that aspect certainly is there. But I actually kind of like the relentless pace of this movie. It's actually, you know, the movie's only 80 minutes long. It does consist of a lot of people crying and screaming at the computer screen. So I could certainly appreciate not having a tolerance for that kind of thing, especially when you will certainly get tired of not only the Skype phone call noise that you hear throughout the movie, but also the sort of the clicking of the icons and the moving of the buttons and stuff like that, and the, you know, erasing. You're going to type something, but no, we're not going to type that. I'm going to type something else. A lot of that happens in the movie, but the pacing of the film worked for me. I think it works to the film's advantage. It doesn't give you a lot of time to sort of contemplate. You know, you just kind of have to go with the supernatural element once it's revealed to be that. The sort of the year anniversary of this girl's suicide, and which of these characters may have been a little bit more involved with why she killed herself than others. And like I said, I to me it worked, and it worked because it just kept me completely in the moment. I was not annoyed with it. Maybe I was, you know, I've seen a few more of these. And there's other movies even besides Open Windows that have done this as well. But I think not being annoyed with it 20 minutes in helps. And I think if you're at that point, I think for the last hour of the movie, it'll work for you, and it did for me. Nick,
I liked it too. I really did. I thought, and I haven't seen Open Windows. This is the first. I didn't see the Modern Family episode that you're talking about. This is the first movie that I've seen that was to take place all on a computer screen. And although I don't think it's, you know, I can understand where Colin's coming from. It's not the most cinematic film that you'll ever see. Like, you're not going to be blown away by, you know, the cinematography or the technology that goes into it. But I liked it. I thought it was clever. I thought it worked. You know, and as a horror movie, I thought it delivered the goods. Like you said, Eric, the pace is really pretty intense. Lots of stuff happens in the short amount of time that the movie exists. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't love it. I didn't think it was great or anything. I liked it. Eric liked it. Colin hated it. All right, so why don't we take a break? When we come back, you guys, you can tell us, give us a preview of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which starts on May 1st at the Music Box Theater. Cool?
Mm-hmm.
All right, hang on, guys. We got Colin, we got Eric, we got the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is coming up in May, and we'll tell you all about it coming up right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We do box office. We do movie reviews with Colin and Eric. They join me from efilmcritic.com and rogerebert.com. So, Furious 7, number one, Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2 comes in second. Unfriended comes in third. It was made $16 million over the weekend. Do you know, Eric, what this thing cost?
I've heard it cost $1 million.
Okay.
Yeah, and this, it's interesting that the film was originally called Cybernatural.
Yeah, I saw that on the IMDb that it was called Cybernatural. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and our friend Scott Weinberg actually brought this little horror festival to the Movie Co. Just last the end of last summer, right around the time that the Wizard World convention was happening.
Yeah.
Around that time or something.
August,
yeah, around
yeah.
that time.
Yeah.
And they actually had this film on their docket, and it was actually pulled from them because I think it actually got snatched up by Universal at the time. And,
now, did Weinberg see it?
Yeah, he saw it and he programmed it.
Right.
And I actually had a screening link for this thing, and in the middle, I watched like 10 minutes of it, and the screening link crapped out on me 10 minutes into the film. And
oh, well, that's pretty creepy.
Yeah. I'll tell you something even creepier. I was at, when I saw this thing at South by Southwest, I tweeted something positive about the movie after seeing it. And that night, or maybe it was the night after, I got tweeted back by the dead girl in the movie. And it wasn't just sort of a random tweet in the kind of thing. It was a tweet that actually referenced one of my quote whores that I do on Critic Watch.
Yeah.
And like it was like tailor-made tweet for me.
Wow.
Very creepy. It actually kind of ruined my night.
Wow. That's weird.
Yes.
Well, the big story is the Chicago Critics Film Festival, the third annual Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is going to start on May 1st at the Music Box Theater. And we welcome Colin and Eric back to the show. All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about the Chicago Critics Film Festival? Give us a little information, and then Colin will talk to you about it.
Okay. As you mentioned earlier, this is the festival that Colin and I are very involved with putting this entire project together. Colin is our shorts program and is also very involved with choosing a lot of these movies. And from May 1st to the 7th at the Music Box Theater, all the films that will be playing throughout the entire week, we have the entire access to the grand 748-seat theater at the Music Box. Is going to be filled with movies that we have programmed, each and every one a Chicago premiere on the big screen, and we couldn't be prouder of this lineup. We have a number of really great guests throughout the week, including Kobe Smulders will be there for two movies. On the weekend the Avengers opens, Kobe Smulders will be at our film festival talking about doing Q&As for her two of her new movies, Results and Unexpected. That's Saturday night. And then it's going to be followed by Bobcat Goldthwait's new documentary, Call Me Lucky, at 9:30. And since we're talking about horror movies and movies that have essentially three characters in them, I want to draw people's attention to our Midnight selection on Saturday night. Colin last week talked about how he's programmed Friday night's shorts program along with Ryan Oliver's Restoration.
Yeah.
And Saturday night at midnight, we're playing a film called Good Night Mommy, which I may have reviewed for you back
did,
at
yeah,
the
you,
Toronto
you,
Fest.
Yeah, you did talk about this one. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this is it's a German film about a mother who has come back from some type of surgery for some accident that she's had, and she comes home to her two twin boys, and her boys don't seem to think that this is the same mother who left them earlier. She seems a little more curt with them. Things are just kind of off in almost a kind of a body snatchers kind of way. And the film is this sort of this really creepy exploration of identity and trying to figure out if this woman is indeed their mother. And this is a film that people the words extreme cinema are being used in correlation with this film. I think that might even be a little bit extreme, but I think just the intensity surrounding this film builds to such a level that some people may not be able to handle it in a way, but that seems to make it the perfect movie to play at the Music Box on a Saturday night. They've had obviously films like this, you know, many, many, many times, but this one works on so many levels, including this area of a sort of extreme cinema that is being referenced. So I really hope people will stick around after Kobe and Bobcat and end their night on a very interesting note Saturday.
All right, cool. All right, and Colin, tell us about some of the shorts. We mentioned my good friend Ryan Oliver and his short Restoration.
Yeah, that's one of the many highlights of the shorts. I'm very excited this year about the lineup. Sunday, May 3rd at 1 p.m., I'll be hosting the first non-horror shorts block. This is sort of a grab bag of everything when I put these together. You get a little bit of animation, a little bit of documentary, a little bit of narrative, a little bit of experimental, and stuff that you just don't know where to put it. And that's what's great about short films, is like you just never know what you're going to get. We got a documentary called Chop My Money about these kids in the Congo who are sort of, you know, gangster wannabes. We got a movie called Guest Room starring Lauren Potter from Glee, the girl with the Down syndrome in Glee. She's a star of this film. Some local filmmakers making good, a documentary called Spear Hunter, which is really a lot of fun. It's almost like Grizzly Man in a way. It's just this guy who he's dead now, but when he was alive, he was like prided himself on being the greatest spear hunter in the world, bar none, as he says. He's just sort of maniacal about spear hunting. A wonderful documentary. If you've ever had a landlord from hell, a landlord who just doesn't leave you alone. There's a documentary called 1 Year Lease, and it's these two guys who basically saved all their voicemail messages from their annoying landlady. And the documentary is all her voicemail messages, and it is hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really good. Really, it just goes on and on. You can't imagine living with this person. Two great animated films in this block. One is called The Ocean Maker, which is the kind of movie that we never get to program, either long or short, at our festival. It's just a great adventure action movie. It's all animated, sort of photorealistic animation, no dialogue, and it rocks. It's so awesome. And then we got Don Hertzfeldt's latest movie, World of Tomorrow. Don Hertzfeldt is sort of a cult figure. He wrote for The Simpsons, and he's been up for Academy Awards for some of his animated short films.
Absolutely,
He does these like simple pencil drawings. His characters don't have much dimension to them when you look at them, but his backgrounds are so gorgeous, and he fills his movies with so many just wonderful ideas. They're like, you know, he's like a Douglas Adams kind of a guy. And this movie is tremendous. I wait to see it on the big screen. And then on Monday, 5 p.m., we have a little more, the shorts program has a little more of a European feel to it, a lot more foreign films. A great documentary called Boxeadora about a woman in Cuba who just wants to go to the Olympics and be, you know, represent Cuba as a boxer, but Cuba forbids it because she's a woman. You know, a really surreal animated movie called A Blue Room that's really beautiful to look at and just very strange and interesting. Documentary called The Little Deputy, by a guy recalling how his dad took him to get his picture taken at sort of this Old West kind of place, and he was more interested in wearing the dress than wearing the sheriff outfit that the guy was offering him. So a lot of great short films this year. I'm really excited about our lineup. And, just on top of that, we just got a couple other great movies. One movie we did not talk about last week, and we should have, is a movie that we're playing on Sunday called Bat Kid Begins, that we're having the director and editor for as a guest. And this is a documentary about the kid who had leukemia, and five-year-old kid who had leukemia, and his dying wish was to be Batman for a day, and how San Francisco made that wish happen.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Wish became just unbelievable, just got an unbelievable amount of press, and just turned into this whole other adventure. This is a documentary that will give you literally tears of joy throughout the whole thing. It is wonderful. So that's Sunday night, Bat Kid Begins. So a stellar lineup for us this year, I got to say.
Okay, and Eric?
I was just going to say, the writer and editor of Bat Kid Begins is actually Kurt Keene, who gave us Dear Zachary.
Oh, man.
Right.
Yeah. So he's involved. So this one is, it's a much happier film.
Yeah.
But it's still, he seems to be involved with films about children that really get the tear ducts going in a very natural way.
Yeah.
And I do have to say that we had a guest audition this week. We have a film on Wednesday night at 10 p.m. called Night Owls. And did you ever watch the show Happy Endings?
Absolutely,
Nick?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Adam Pally will be there at the screen of Night Owls.
Yeah.
Yeah, Adam Pally will be there along with the director, Charles Hood. This is a film that it's about two people, about a guy and a girl having a one-night stand. And he finds out that she is actually the lover of the ex-mistress of his boss, and she tries to commit suicide in his house. So, it's kind of a blessing and a curse to sort of compare yourself with the apartment, in a way.
Yeah.
I think the chemistry between Pally and Rosa Salazar, who plays the woman, I think is really palatable. It's really, really wonderfully done. So Pally and the director will be there Wednesday night. So don't miss that.
Wow, that's great. All right, people can get tickets and check out the schedule on the website, correct? Well, give everybody the website.
At the ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com, just go to the homepage. The schedule is right there for you if you want to read up on any of the movies and plan your week. And on the left side there, you can't miss it, the link to the Music Box Theater where you can buy tickets. Tickets range $10 for all of Colin's short programs, $12 or $15 for some of the other films. And then you can buy a full pass for the entire week for $150. That's as much as it would cost you to pay for the movies just on the weekend, and you would get the whole week for that. And I'm telling you that we're so proud of this lineup that if you don't like any of the movies, it's gonna be hard to say that you're not going to like 90% of these movies that we've chosen.
Okay, great job, you guys. All right, Colin, Eric, very, very cool. We'll talk to you next week. We don't have anything big next week, do we?
No, yeah, Russell Crowe directs and Blake Lively doesn't age.
Okay. All right, you guys. Well, we'll talk to you next week. It's Colin and Eric. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
There you go. Colin, Eric with the movie reviews and the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is starting on May 1st. Go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com for more information. Morning, everybody. It's a Monday, beginning our work week. Less than an hour, my dad will be calling in to tell a joke to get your week off to a laugh. It's a jokey time. Plus, we'll be playing back the Blackhawks Express from yesterday's fantastic game. In fact, the best game that I think the Hawks have played in many weeks. That's all coming up. Plus, we're going to talk about the first guests ever on 24 late-night talk shows. We'll get into that as well. But before that, now, Dan, as you know, just in the movie review segment, Colin and Eric and I, none of us saw the Paul Blart motion picture Experience.
Interesting choice. Experience.
Yeah.
Choice of words.
I'm always surprised, now everything is like experience it in IMAX and 3D. I was really hoping that they would advertise Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 to experience it in IMAX and 3D, because that would be great. Now, we didn't see it, but my old producer, Andrew W.P.H. Herman XV, who produces Outside the Loop Radio for Mike Steven, reviewed the original Paul Blart movie. So instead of reviewing the new one, we're going to replay Andy's review from whenever the Paul Blart movie came out, 7-8 years ago. And here's Andy's review of Paul Blart. So, Paul Blart, Mall Cop, Andy was waiting. You went to the Logan, and?
And went on Wednesday, the 8:10 showing. And Maggie can attest to this. She's asleep now, but I was laughing when we walked up and the poster was on the wall with him and his mustache, And so we went out for some Mexican food across the street before, and we came up with a list of categories that we marked down. The whole thing was hilarious. I'll just say that's my review. Paul Blart, Mall Cop, hilarious. Kevin James, funny guy. He falls down a lot.
Yeah, he does.
On a 1 to 10 scale,
they have.
What would you give it, Andy?
I'd give it about a 7.
Okay.
7.5.
You're out of your mind. All right, go ahead.
We came up with categories, nine categories.
Yep.
And we'd mark it down every time something happened. How many times he falls? 16 times. Embarrassed in front of the love interest? 3 times. Kids make fun of him? 1 time. Fat jokes? 9.
9?
Yep.
Okay.
Segway mishaps? 1. At least 1. There must have been more. Mustache jokes? Only 1.
Yeah, you would hope that you would think that there would be more mustache jokes.
Jokes about him not being a real cop? 3. And this one we added later because it was just so awesome. There were at least 3 instances of slow motion.
Yeah.
Which ruled. And the 2 that we had down here that didn't have any check marks next to it, Paul Blart eating mall food. I didn't catch any instances of that, like corn dogs and things like that.
Yeah.
And the most obvious, the biggest disappointment of the movie, no jokes on his name.
Well, yeah.
Once did they say fart.
Yeah, they didn't. And you would think that they, because, it's such an obvious rhyme scheme.
And everything about the movie is really obvious and awesome.
Yeah.
But they just didn't go for the Blart fart joke.
So 7.5 out of 10.
Yes.
And how many times did he fall down? 16?
16.
Wow. He fell 16. And the movie's like 90 minutes long,
too. I laughed every time he fell down. And his mustache was awesome.
What did Maggie think of it?
She enjoyed it.
Did she?
Yeah. We had a good time.
There's a typical date night for Mr. and Mrs. Herman.
Yep.
They go out to Paul Blart Mall Cop at the Logan.
Have some margaritas before. Hit the Logan.
That might be why you like the movie. Those margaritas help out.
That helped.
So there you go. If that helps you out in your concern about Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, Andy Herman and his wife Maggie actually enjoyed the first one.